session number 24902, Reel 2.
Food.
Food was always great, always a good grub in the Navy.
How was it arranged? How were you fed?
Well, on the Belfast, we used to have about 12 men in the mess, in my mess, and I was in number 12 mess, and each morning you used to have two cooks at a mess. You were cooking a mess. Your job then was to get up in the morning, go and get the food, make the tea, and get all the provisions in the evening, you know, when you used to go and get your sugar and milk and tea and butter, jam and all that. That was your job. And then your job was in the morning, when some of the lads used to go out and scrub decks in the morning. Every morning you had to scrub decks. They went and got the breakfast, and then you have to put the breakfast out for all your men, put some in the hot press, you know, if someone was on watch. And then they'd all come down and have their breakfast. When they're finished, they used to go to work, and then you had to wash up all the breakfast things, clean out everything. Then you had to scrub all the tables, all the benches, lift them up, put them on a skyhook, which was hanging up on the deckhead. And then you had to scrub all the floor, then put them all back again when it was dry, and stow everything away. And then one of you had to stand there because an officer had come round and inspect it. And if that wasn't clean enough, you'd have to do it all again with someone watching you. So you always made sure that you had it clean and everything. Every Sunday you used to have captain's rounds, and every knife, fork, spoon, fanny, dish, kettle, everything had to be spotless and cleaning. And even the gas bucket where you used to put all your rubbish in, and that's all grease, you can just imagine, and over bacon and all that. And that had to be polished as well, inside and out. Everything used to be spotless. There's one thing about the Navy, you could eat your food off the deck.
How did you become... Sorry, did you call it a mess? The people who did that were called mess.
Oh, cook of the mess.
Cook of the mess. How did you become cook of the mess?
Well, everybody in the mess had to do their turn at cook of the mess.
Did that change on a daily basis or a weekly basis?
Daily, yeah. You'd be cook of the mess today and then someone else would do it tomorrow, so that you rotated all the time. The only ones that didn't do cook of the mess was leading hands, you know, they was in charge here. But you really knuckled down because, you know, you had to be clean. There's one thing about in the Navy, you had to be clean. And if you wasn't clean, they'd get a warning. Because you're sitting together on a table and you can't put your elbows out like that. You sit like that because you're all jammed in. There's more men that would fit in the mess because, you know, some were up on watch. And if you started to pong a little bit, they'd say, it's about time you got down the old shower room, you know. And if you didn't go, you'd be taken down there, stripped off, and you'd be scrubbed with... They'd put soft soap on you, and you'd get a hard broom, and they used to scrub you with that. And we was doing that one day with one, and it was captain, like the officer was doing rounds in the evening, inspecting everything. And he came in the bathroom and he looked in, and we all stood there and he see what we was doing, and he said, "Carry on," and just walked off. He knew what we was doing.
That was on the Belfast.
Yeah.
Did that system?
That is a system in the Navy. If you don't wash, then they wash you, give you a good scrub down.
Going back to the eating arrangements. You talked about the mess system on the Belfast. Mm. Did the mess system exist whilst you were training?
No. No, you didn't. Not on the training ship. You just went, you know, and you got your food. Yeah, that was all done for you. But when you come out from training, you know, you had to do all your own cooking and everything. And in the evening, they used to come round every evening and... used to have a bugler come round, bugle, and played a still and you all had to stand still, and you all had to be in night clothing. You had to take off your working clothes and put on a jumper and your bell bottoms, or a white front and bell bottoms. You couldn't stay work all your working clothes, they had to be taken off. And then they used to come round and look and see that everything had been swept up and tidy. You should never have anything laying about, because that was confiscated. Anything laying about, because they said if the ship gets hit and it's sinking and they want to pump it out, you know, pump this, like that section out, and you've left your jumper about or something to get stuck up the suction, they can't pump it out. So that was always taken away, and you had to give an inch of soap to get that article back.
Going back to the training period, how did you spend your free time when you had shore leave?
Oh, when you just go ashore, you could go ashore, joining all the sports, or you could take away, get someone to take one of the boats away sailing, you know, could sail around. Normally it was in like Weymouth Harbour and Portland and places like that, and then you could go for a sail round, you know. But then there was football, cricket, you got all the teams against, like classes against each other, and that's what you done.
Did you mix with any of the civilian population during that time?
Not really, only when you went ashore, you know, that you went in the pub and had a walk round, but you didn't do a lot with the civilians. You didn't. You kept to yourself, more or less, you know. Only looked for girlfriends or something like that, you know.
What was your parents' reaction to you joining the Navy? How did your family react?
Didn't really know. I know, you know, my dad said if that's what you want to do, you go and do it, boy, you know. But I think they always knew that I wanted to go to sea, and that's what I done.
After you completed your training on the HMS King George, where were you drafted next?
I got drafted to Chatham Barracks. And from there I was sent to HMS Wildfire, which was down at Sheerness, to do a gunnery course.
Can I just ask you when that was? What year?
That was... must have been 1949, I think it was, 49-ish. Can't remember.
Why were you sent on that course? Had you expressed an interest in becoming a gunner?
Yes, yeah. They asked you what you wanted, branch you wanted to go in, you know, and I told them that I wanted to be a gunnery, because I used to have a muzzle loader 12-bore shotgun, and I was always into guns. I had air rifles and things like that, and that's why I wanted to go into the gunnery.
When were you, at what stage of your training were you asked? In which area you wanted to specialise?
That was after you'd finished, you had finished your training, you know, and they said, you know, you'd be going to Chatham Barracks, and then when you got there, they asked you what you wanted to go for, you know, and I put in, because you could go for quartermaster and things like that, and I thought in for gunnery. But there is a big gunnery school at Chatham, and of course I started there first and then went on to Sheerness to do the shoots, the live shoots.
Tell me about the training.
Training was very strict, because mucking about with guns, you know, it's very strict. And we always had, we started from pistols, we started in the pistol butts. And then we went on to Lanchesters, which is like the equivalent to the Sten gun. But the Navy always had Lanchesters. And then we went down the Bren gun. And then we went on to Oerlikon, and then Bofors, and then Pom-Poms. And we used to do live shoots at aircraft towing a drogue. And everything was recorded in a room there, so that they could check up how near you was to the drogue, you know. Everything was tracked. by radar, I presume, or some form of tracking device. We also had to do the assault course. You know, you see it on the television where the Marines and that do the assault course. We had to do that as well. Climb up. It was like the side of a ship all made out of railway sleepers. We had to climb up ropes up there with our rifles on our back and then run down the other side. And then we had to do the jumping over the ditches and climbing through a pipe half full of water and fireworks chucked up behind you, and then run along. You had to run about 200 yards and then lay down and fire, and then get up and run another 100 yards and then fire again, you know. And the time I was down there, it was Navy days, so I had to do that twice. Oh, on the high wire. That is the high wire where you pull yourself across the high wire. And we had to do that twice a day for 4 days over Navy days. And I was really shattered at the end of it.
So you were learning how to use anti-aircraft guns?
Yes.
And also hand weapons?
Yeah, because normally if there's any problems ashore, it's always the gunnery ratings that go, because they've all had training with the small arms. And that's the reason I went up. When we came in, the Belfast went into Singapore for a refit to get the all the 6-inch guns. Actually, have the barrels changed because we've been doing so much firing that they was wearing, and we was losing range. And they put a notice up on the notice board. Anybody interested in going up with 42 Commando in the jungle, Royal Marine Commandos? And I knew me. I put my name down and went up there. And when I came back from there, the train got blew up, the train we was coming back on. We went up there for 10 days with the Royal Marine Commandos, and we'd done a 5-day jungle patrol with them. When I came back, I was walking in the Naffy, and there was my mate I went to join the Navy with. He was sitting in there, and he was a Royal Marine Commando, old Donald Osborne.
We'll perhaps come back to that a bit later on.
Right.
After you completed your training, unless there's anything else you remember about that you want to talk about?
No, we just, that's what you always used to do. You used to do your training, it was a set period, you know, and then you got your marks on that, and they used to put your marks up where you know, the marks you got, whether you passed or whether you didn't pass. But I passed all the time. And then naturally, when I came back from career on the Belfast, I got sent for the second class to do the second class part of the gunnery.
And what did that involve?
That more or less, as I told you, while we was out there, the anti-aircraft and gun layers had amalgamated, and you had to learn how to operate on the 4-inch guns and the 6-inch guns, the layering part of it, which was more or less following pointers, you know.
What does that mean?
Well, you normally can't see anything on the long-range guns, you know. With anti-aircraft, you can see the aeroplane coming at you. But on those, when you're firing 12 miles inland, you can't see what's there. And they work out all the range and that, and it's all put into more or less a computer, and you're sitting looking at a clock, and you've got pointers going round, and you've got hand control, and you keep them pointers to keep them in line, and that gives you the range and elevation, or aim off, you know, depending which way you're going. And that was the part we had to learn for the layer part of it.
When did you do that second part piece of training?
That was after I come back from Korea in 1950. Well, that was in 1953 when I started picking up on all that. Because when we came back, we had a lot of the gunnery calls got blocked up because we had dock strikes up in London, and we was being sent up there. I went up there, and we had to go down to, on a tug, go down to Southend and bring the ships up with all the stores on, because all the tugmen was on strike, and the dockers, and a lot of the stokers and other, they was operating the cranes, getting all the food. We were stationed, they sent us up to Woolwich Arsenal, and we was billeted in the stables, what was, that was, can't think of the word. They was that old that they was, they weren't allowed to use them in the First World War, and we were sleeping in there in our hammocks. And after that, we had the great floods in 1953. Then we was all sent down to the Isle of Sheppey for that, for about 3 weeks, digging breaches in the sea wall to let all the water off.
We'll perhaps come back to that a bit later on, because I'm trying to deal with it
right.
Broadly, mm-hmm. Chronological sort of order. After you'd finished your first course in gunnery,
yeah,
what happened to you then?
Then I was back into the barracks, and then I was sent on the HMS Diadem, joined the HMS Diadem in Chatham Barracks.
What sort of ship was she?
HMS Diadem was a cruiser. And we just do little trips all around England, going to different places, you know, calling in, just showing the flag.
So she was part of the Home Fleet?
Yes, she was Home Fleet.
Tell me about your arrival on the HMS Diadem, your first real ship.
Well, the first ship was, you know, was the King George V, but that was a small ship, much smaller than the King George V.
But that was a training ship at
yeah,
that time.
Yeah.
This was your first proper posting.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I found it much smaller, you know, after the King George V, and it was much easier to find your way about. And that's it. And then you had to get in and work with the rest of the lads, you know, you all had to muck in and all get to know each other's little quirks, but you all had to get on together, you know, you had to be a team, really.
Presumably this was the first time you were put in a mess.
Yes, in a small mess, yes.
How did you react to that?
Well, it's got a bit getting used to it at first, you know, because you all had to look after yourself. We always had mum clearing up behind you, and you had to do everything, get everything clean and that, do washing up and things like that. And I found it a little bit strange, but I suppose everybody else did, you know.
And what were your duties during your time on that ship? I should say in that ship.
Well, it's more or less, you was put in the watch. The watches were split up to in port and starboard, you know, first port, second port, first starboard, second starboard. And because the ship is manned all the time, so whenever you was on watch, you know, someone's always had to be steering, or someone had to be, you know, down up on the deck doing work, you know, might be washing down the, like the housing around there, or working on anything, you know, cleaning out boats, working on the, you know, on the motorboats and things, cleaning them, scrubbing decks. You could be doing anything, you know, storing, get some stores up.
Do you remember?
And you always had a deck by the sea boats. You always had a duty watch by the sea boats, and they was there for lifeboats crew. If the lifeboats called away lifeboats crew, that is the nearest man to the lifeboat gets in it. You don't have to wait for the crew that's standing by on the normal sea boat, you know, lifeboats crew, nearest man that gets into it and get it away as quick as possible. But you always had a crew there waiting, you know, because we had two. You had one whaler on the port side, one on the starboard side, and there was always men there all the time, ready to man those at any second to get there, get them away.
Did you keep up your gun training during that time?
Yeah, we still used to have shoots. We used to go out and they'd send aircraft over with the drogue, you know, and they'd do live firing at it. And they also used to send out a tug, and it used to tow a big target behind it, and then, because the bigger guns used to fire at that. And a lot of times you used to do a fire off, you know, you'd have a destroyer which is on the horizon going along, and then you'd track it as if you was actually firing at it, but in point of fact you was firing, the gun was 10 degrees ahead of it, and then they could see where the splash was when the shell dropped, and then they could work out whether you would have hit it if you was actually firing at it. Do you get me meaning? Didn't want to fire at the ship, but that was, you know, the way they used to practice.
How long were you on that ship, in that ship?
Normally I was about a year. I think I was on the Dynam about a year. I could tell you the exact dates, but they're on my papers upstairs.
And how did you spend your free time?
We used to play cards, whist, you know, uckers, that's Ludo, Navy call it uckers, Aussie, and Tombola, that is another one. But there's always something to do. You know, you could do what you like. You could swap if you wanted to go in, you know, go for your hook, you know, if you wanted to, you know, to improve yourself.
What was that, going for your hook?
Well, leading seaman, you know, get your hook. But, and then, of course, you had to learn that. You had to learn Morse. And signalling. Well, we all had to do that in your training, not most, but you had to learn the old signalling with the flags. Or you do your writing, you know, write home, catch up on there, do your ironing, do your washing, scrub your hammock, you know, you always find something to do. If it's nice, you'd go and sit up on deck with your mates and have a chat, you know, especially in the tropics, get up there in the cool.
What happened after you left HMS Dynam?
HMS Dynam. I went back into the barracks again.
Presumably that was Chatham.
Chatham Barracks, yeah. That's what I think. And I think that's when I went into the barracks, and that's when I got the Belfast.
John Rowlatt, Reel 3.